For October the 8th, 2021, we talk about There Is No Game, Devour, and NGU Industries. Welcome to Level 388. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Dennis.
Hey, good to be back.
Yeah, you were you were on vacation. I was hearing cool stories in the green room. I'm happy.
I feel like to be precise, though, with three kids in tow on an international trip, you don't really vacation. You just parent elsewhere. So
right,
that was the nature of it. But it was still a really, really freaking cool trip.
I was going to ask a dumb question. I was going to ask if you've been overseas before, but you did like internships and stuff over in like Finland, didn't you?
Yeah, it was the like study abroad quarter for the program I was in.
Yeah,
and then we've done trips to like South America places. But this, would have been only my second. No, we also did Greece last year.
Okay. Yeah.
Third time overseas.
Nice. Yeah. So this is not your first rodeo.
No, but definitely the most intense rodeo, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's all my kids' first rodeo.
Right.
And that makes things interesting.
And you're responsible for them, or at least that's what the judge said.
Yes. We tried to leave them there. It didn't work.
They just mailed them back to us.
Yeah. basically did. Getting over there was easier than I thought with kids, because we had an overnight flight where they just slept. And then international flights have little TVs in the back of the seat. And that's crack cocaine for a 5 and 7 year old.
Yeah, just unrestrained screen time.
Just had the littlest to deal with there. But I think they had really cool experiences and obviously they're cool for Jen and I as well. So it feels good to kind of start them on that travel bug early.
Yeah.
We got back to the airport and got out of the airport probably at like 7 PM, which Ireland is 5 hours ahead. So it felt like midnight for the kids. They never stay up that late. Milo, my 5-year-old, gets into the car seat and literally goes, "Thank you so much for taking us on vacation." And just like drops off mid sentence.
Oh man.
So it was exhausting chasing kids around, but that kind of validated it was all worth it.
Oh man.
Yeah, we did a family photo shoot over there. We try to do photos every 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. So I did them at the Cliffs of Moher with kind of like a rainstorm behind us. So we have some classic Cliffs of Moher double rainbow family shots mixed there. Yeah.
Everybody's got some of those. She's got to. Yeah. No, you've never been.
Yeah. Yeah. So, driving out to the shoot, it's like, oh, we're going to get rained on and this is going to suck. And all that, and then thankfully it was kind of the rain was in the perfect place in relation to us and the cliffs, and the sun came out and it was pretty magical. So
nice.
Good times all around.
Cool. Well, I'm happy you had a good time and I'm happy to have you back.
Yeah, we'll see how well I remember how to do this. I feel like any more than 1 week away you start getting shaky, so.
Oh man, I had something similar happen. My lawnmower is ready. They finished doing the tune-up. But I can't go get it because the one person that I know who has a trailer for me to put it on, they're on COVID lockdown. They're on quarantine.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that's exactly the same as taking three children to a faraway land.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And that's literally all.
I would say you're about ready to start having kids.
That's what I say. You know, you just I'm working my way up to having a dog. Get a cat. You get a mower. Then you go dog, and then you go kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, I honestly would put dog after kids on this one, just because kids eventually become like self sufficient and don't need you anymore, whereas the dog is gonna be in that kind of kid mode.
Yeah,
ad infinitum.
Dogs mellow out when they get older too. But I do like that you put mowers in between dogs and cats in terms of level of affection, because I think that's the correct placement.
Yes. Yeah.
Some dogs mellow out when they get older. I have some very clear case studies that others do not. But yes,
that's true.
Do mowers mellow out as they get older?
No, but they get way more expensive.
Not as sharp as they used to be.
Yeah, they get way more expensive to keep up is the thing. Yeah. Oh well.
My god! So I had to repair. I think I talked about needing to repair a mower a while ago, and I've got like the husk of the mower that we took the engine out of. It was a whole thing. It's still in my backyard, and at this point, it was like, oh, I'll sell it for parts. Oh, yeah. I'll give it away for parts. Oh, I'll pay someone to come and pick this up, please.
I can't deal with this. I just can't. No, I've got a push mower, and something chewed through the fuel line, so it is worse than useless. So I need to find a way to give that away for scrap or whatever. It's just taking up room in the god, I'm boring myself. David, how about you? What's going on?
Not a whole heck of a lot. Doing a bunch of sewing, stuff like that, getting ready for Halloween. I had to dual a pair of wasp nests that had taken up outside my house.
Ooh. Oh, huh.
Yeah, I'm a little indignant because I was very much taking the live and let live approach.
Oh,
and then one day I walked out my door and one of the wasps just straight up flies down and stings me.
Oh, like, yeah, they broke the peace.
Are not known for their live and let live behavior, by the way.
they don't tend to hold very well to uneasy detente.
Yeah, so apparently I didn't realize this. Like, that's a distinct difference between bees and wasps, because bees basically have, because of how they hunt for flowers and stuff, have fairly complex understandings of, like, location, stuff like that, and are able to understand, like, oh, this is where an animal lives, therefore, like, if it's there, it's probably not trying to hurt me.
Right, right.
Whereas wasps are just, like, see things sting.
Yeah, I mean, wasps were basically just big, angry ants that learned how to fly, so.
Right, exactly. So I proceeded to, neighbor didn't have, wasp spray, but did have, like, generic bug spray.
Okay.
So I had just kind of mist the entire general area.
Okay.
Did you have the foresight
to do this at dusk?
No, just kind of,
ooh.
mist and dodge inside. Okay. This was literally right outside my front door.
Oh, huh.
So this is why you're bobbing and weaving.
Exactly. I'm dodging the wasp.
Yes.
So the other thing that's kind of morbid is the hive or whatever, had a ton of eggs.
Okay.
And so now it's covered in, like, dead wasps that just, like, hatched and then immediately, like, died from the residual pesticide.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Ooh. I mean, it's hard to, they were gonna eventually turn into wasps, so, but, like, as a short story, that is sad. Yeah.
The other thing that's sad is, like, as I was dodging in, a couple of them, like, flew inside. And proceed to, this was, the wasp nest was, like, in between the, two panes of glass on the window.
Oh, huh.
Because the apartment's just a little shoddy, and it's not actually possible to fully close the second pane, the outer pane.
Okay.
And so they proceeded to just then, like, stand on the, pane of glass and look longingly at their home. And it's like, dude, I would help you, but you've already established you're just randomly sting a dude.
Yeah, no, I would help you, but you're not to be trusted. So,
exactly.
What's everybody's stances on spiders? I feel like some people do the spiders in their house since they kill the flies.
If I see one, that I usually will take care of it, especially if it looks especially nasty. But yeah, if I see one, it means that it is encroached into my space. So, mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, as long as they will in any way, shape or form, like leave me be, which most spiders will, I'm generally cool with them. Although, wolf spiders are just evil. So wolf spiders must go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm kind of a kill on sight guy. But then my kids will get on the moral high ground on that issue. Oh. So I've got to, it's like, yeah, no, we're, we no, we'll leave it alone. Hey, is that a toy in the other room?
Oh, man.
Getting high-roaded by some 7-year-olds.
Some after-school special. Like,
I don't know. It was different in Ohio because in Ohio, not so much. Very many spiders that, you know, are dangerous at all, whereas down here there are still not a ton, but there's at least more.
Yeah. No, the closer you get to like Florida. Yeah.
I feel like you can say that for just about anything.
Yeah.
Like Florida is kind of like America's Australia.
Yeah.
You know, I was about to say, you know, Florida is the closest state to Australia, so that might factor in.
That could be.
Is that true?
Yeah, it feels right, so I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah, no, that's all that matters.
I feel like Hawaii might win that one.
But Hawaii doesn't count. Hawaii never counted.
No, actually, it's Hawaii harsh. Doesn't have any spiders, so.
Yeah, no.
What?
Wait, did they not?
No, I have no idea.
It's like a St. Patrick.
Is there like a Hawaiian St. Patrick? He like cast out all the spiders.
I'm sorry, Hawaii. That seemed like a funny thing to say as a knee-jerk reaction. It would be very strange to take a hard line on Hawaii this late in the game.
Yeah, I mean, there was a push to add a state recently. I think we need a push to get rid of one.
Oh, no. Make it fine with 49.
Are we still talking about Florida?
By Florida, yep.
Wait. If we follow Reddit logic, it's Mississippi.
Oh, yeah. I mean, granted, I am probably going to Mississippi this weekend, but, like, most of Mississippi, yeah.
What's Reddit logic? And how does it pertain to Mississippi, Ben?
There was a Reddit thread of, like, what's the worst state in the U.S.? And everyone dogpiled on Mississippi. And just
I mean, that's just math. Like, there's a common saying in Alabama, you know, thank goodness for Mississippi. Because, like, Mississippi saves Alabama from being, like, you know, because of Mississippi, we're only 49th in, like, teen pregnancy, infant mortality, you know, low education attainment, you know, all these things.
God, it's just a stone cold bummer, you guys. Ugh.
Someone's got to be last.
What about right now? I'm feeling like if we could cut out around like Houston and Austin and just like push the rest of Texas out to sea.
I'm starting to get into the point where like in my head, I'm starting to take this seriously. And it's like, I want the best for those people. Like, I don't want to kick them out. What I want is for them to get good services and stuff.
Even if that's not ever actually going to happen.
I know. Ben, how about you? What's going on?
Not too much. Busy week at work, but this Friday I'm going to a concert. I'm taking the day off, and so that'll be really nice.
Nice.
About it. I'm going to the eye doctor in the afternoon too.
Oh, dang!
First time in a couple of years.
Yeah, I haven't been for a while, and I've never gone to the same eye doctor twice.
You gotta throw them off your scent. That's good. Yeah,
it's like the Winchester Mystery House, the Winchester Mystery Eyes. Those ghosts.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's well known. They just do the exams to decide whose eyes they're going to steal.
And then they send out the collectors. Yeah. I should correct that. I've not gone to the same optometrist twice since high school. There we go.
I do like how the common pattern is every time you get a new pair of glasses, you're like, I hate these, man. These aren't like my old ones. Mm-hmm. And then after like a couple of weeks, you're like, man, I like these glasses. Yeah. And then like by the time you get your next ones, you're like, oh man, these aren't the old.
Yeah. So, and it's a quote Wayne's World. It's like a new pair of underwear. First, it's restrictive, but then it becomes a part of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure there'll be more Wayne's World quotes to be had, but we've got a regular kind of show to do, what with the grind of the multiplayer and the end boss and all. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. It is customary to throw the person who's been away the longest, but don't feel pressured, Dennis. I know you've been on vacation. Probably not a lot of game stuff happened there, but I want to give you the first opportunity, Dennis.
Yeah, not a ton while on vacation, although I feel like a ritual for me is anytime I'm traveling, I'll like kind of browse through the app store and be like, what's the mobile time waster I can play while in airplane mode?
Yeah.
And I actually found a pretty good one this time. I'm very happy with it. A little game called Sliding Seas.
Sliding Seas.
Yeah, that is S-E-A-S, and is a match 3 game themed after rescuing shipwreck survivors.
Okay.
And darn it, these are just the cutest shipwreck survivors you've ever seen. They're all in their little like floaty life rings, with their smiles on their faces. So basically, you know, it's your match 3 grids in different shapes, where you can spin, you know, to adjacent blocks, etc. And the idea is to try to rescue survivors that have plopped into certain squares on the grid. You do that by changing the squares from deep water to shallow water to sand to earth, etc. So every time you make a match, instead of all the squares in the match disappearing, they kind of all pull into the one that you moved to make the match and form the next highest level of terrain. Okay. So like if you match 3 deep sea squares, they'll become a shallow sea square, and you match 3 shallow sea squares, it becomes a sand square, etc. And so that's a little wrinkle that changes the kind of typical language of a match 3 game that I hadn't realized was so deeply ingrained in me until it was slightly changed.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense.
I mean, it almost sounds like threes to me, right?
Yeah, it's got a little bit of that threes to it, but definitely hues. It's got threes in it in that the blocks don't disappear when you match them; they kind of morph into each other.
Yeah.
But whereas threes, the complexity comes from managing as they stack up ad infinitum. These only stack a couple of levels until you get to the highest level of terrain. Mm-hmm. And in some levels that terrain is there for good and you have to manage around it. In other levels, that terrain will kind of, break if it's icebergs, it will break and disappear. So you can kind of, level up a square, for lack of a better term, until it is removed from the board. So the little peoples that you're rescuing start out in the sea, and you've got to match enough to get them to land before they drown, and then you need to match enough on land to get them into either the highest tier of land, which has huts on it, before they die to the elements, or if you do a match 4 in or higher in any direction, it'll create huts or life rafts on the squares that you match 4 with.
Okay.
Yeah, so fun little twist on something that's a very familiar genre at this point. The free-to-play stuff is not that restrictive at all. You get 5 lives and only recharge 1 life every half hour, but you only lose one of the lives if you lose a level,
right?
Not if you play a level. I'm 175 levels in at this point, and still only encounter levels that actually take more than a couple tries, very rarely. Mostly, yeah. It's pretty breezy. Which it should be. It's on the high seas. So yeah, there's all your standard twists on it. There's, you know, different modes. Like I said, sometimes you're building terrain. Sometimes you're building icebergs. Sometimes you're trying to destroy pirate ships by matching next to them. Sometimes you're trying to move people just to the bottom of the matches to get them out. But it kind of scratched the gaming itch while I was gallivanting around Ireland.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. So, yeah. No,
check out Sliding Seas.
I have not. I've got to say, re-terraforming the bottom of the ocean seems like a terribly inefficient way to rescue somebody.
Yeah. It really is an elaborate way to save someone who's probably dying of hypothermia while they're waiting for the earth to rise under them.
You just don't understand my startup pitch, man.
You're not seeing the big picture.
Yeah. What I will say is this is couched, since we're talking terraforming, this is couched in the conceit of building your own island.
Okay.
And so it's got almost an Animal Crossing feel to it in that sense, in that you start out with a tiny little island, and then every time you rescue a certain number of people to the island via, you know, progressive levels, you get to choose a new building to put on your island. And it's always like, cool. Do you want the basketball court or the tennis court? Do you want the disco hall or the grocery store? Most recently, I added a dojo with ninjas.
So you're recruiting, you're saving these people and then just making them your slaves.
I'm bringing them to my personal island. The nature of their employment on the island is not clear.
Yeah.
However, once you do pick a building, you will start seeing quote unquote VIP people who actually do have like a profession. And so if you pick the basketball court, sometimes the people you're pulling onto life rafts are basketball players. There's a couple different versions of them for each place. So
is the island cosmetic? Like, is it like a little dollhouse kind of thing, or does that confer bonuses during play?
No, purely cosmetic. And I was kind of expecting bonuses during play because that would be rad.
Yeah.
But no, very, very simple. And you can change the cosmetics of like the trees on the island. And so as you play as well, you'll unlock different. Like I've got grapes and tomatoes instead of just regular trees.
Yeah.
Now, but it's all just completely cosmetic.
Yeah.
So pretty friendly game, at least for the first 200 levels, and a good little match 3 time waster on your phone.
Nice. Just a little compulsive play.
Yeah. So slide them C's, and have fun with that. But yeah, that, I actually, before and after vacation, I managed to play another game that's a pretty recent release.
Okay.
So if there are no other questions on Sliding Seas, I can bop over to that.
I have none.
Cool. I downloaded and have been playing a game called Lost in Random. Has this crossed any of your radars?
Hey, Jala talked about this, I believe.
I believe she did.
Well, sweet.
Yeah.
Excellent. I haven't listened to the episodes that I was not here for, so we'll see how well our notes compare. Yeah. You guys know that it's like a Tim Burton-ass adventure game where you run around with little kind of claymation type of character who is in a world called Random, hence the name, discovers a magical dice that is used to impact the world. There used to be a ton. Now only the evil queen has one. So it's very unique that you found one for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you adventure through this crazy world where each area is themed after a side of the die, or after a number, I guess, trying to get your sister back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a super cool, fun idea, and very, very like Burton inspired.
Yeah.
All sorts of like creepy little touches to the world, like the... some of the characters have like this extra wide grin that you'll see like on the side of their mouth. It's kind of sewn shut a little bit, for how wide it is. And just like, they're all very friendly and happy and stuff. There's the kind of werewolf character. But it's definitely got that kind of, creepy, eerie Addams Family bent to it.
Yeah.
Which is very charming. But the thing that frustrates the hell out of me is the entire world is covered in this like dense blanket of fog. And it's, I would say it's like the kind of like, you know, render distance limiting fog that old games kind of employed a lot of the time.
Yeah. Silent Hill fog.
Except it doesn't feel like the visual quality of the game demands something like that. Like nothing about this is so technically complex that, it would not be able to run smoothly unless there's like a port of this on a PlayStation 1 that I don't know of. But what that means is you're in these like crazy locales that all have so much personality, but you constantly feel like you just can't see very much of it. And even though there's these really cool ideas behind each area, at the end of the day, it just kind of feels like you're in another cramped alley after cramped alley. And anytime you do, you know, kind of manage to get a further out view, it's obscured by fog. So, you know, I have to imagine there's a technical reason behind the choice, because I don't understand why anyone would make it as an artistic choice.
Yeah.
And it just is a kind of constant damper on an otherwise very, very, I think beautiful isn't the right word, but imaginative and fun to look at game.
Yeah. It works at cross purposes, because like one of the cool things about 3D platformers is like the variety of locales, you know, and also exploring. And both of those would be, it feels like both of those would be hindered by an inability to see at a distance, you know?
Yeah. So that's an odd choice or an unfortunate requirement of making the game run.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But the actual game behind it is quite fun. Mm-hmm. So there's the die that you roll, and that gives you essentially a freeze frame in combat. So you got a little slingshot that you can shoot people with to charge up cards. Mm-hmm. Then you throw your dice, and that tells you how much mana you have to spend on your cards. So you know there's a deck building element, and then this kind of board game theme that runs throughout, regardless of what town you are in. And so you kind of build your deck, you throw the dice, and kind of based on how much mana you have, what cards you draw, you can equip different weapons or different spells, and all that, to impact your battles, which is a really cool, just fun idea.
Yeah.
That always keeps things like, even if you get overpowered stuff, you can never be confident that you're going to draw that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so every combat feels like it's got the potential to be difficult or put you in a tight spot, even if it's just kind of a standard mob rather than any kind of boss. And yeah. I like that a lot. Very, very cool idea.
Both you and Jala have made the combat in this sound very much unlike other combat that I have heard of in 3D platform games like this. I mean, normally the combat is kind of perfunctory, like outside of a Ratchet and Clank, you know, where you're doing some shooting. I just associate the genre with hops and or bops, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it is very easy. Like, you know, you freeze time when you roll the dice, and I keep on forgetting that I'm not like on the clock to restart time. Mm-hmm. And I probably place things suboptimally or like don't use my cards as well as I could, because I just don't think about how far I can run within the arena or how much time I can take to think through and line everything up perfectly.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if I took full advantage of it, you kind of have all the freedom in the world with time paused to move and set traps, etc. So it's got a little bit of that Final Fantasy problem that I described the last time I was on, where it's like I can mash, I can run, I can jump, and so why would I ever stop to think? This game continues that trend. But it is really fun to kind of pause when everyone's about to pile on you, place a bomb, run away from the bomb, and shoot the bomb everyone's piling onto instead.
Yeah,
and that is excellent. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like Dishonored.
Yeah, you know what? It is platforming, or it is Tim Burton by way of Dishonored.
There's a board game that this reminds me of called Castles of Burgundy, where the premise is you roll two die, and what the values are, you do different actions, and you kind of have to accommodate to like whatever the randomness is. Huh. So I'd be curious to see how much it lines up with that.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the game. Is it anything like the Cones of Dunshire, or
is that an actual game? What?
I am confident that at this point the Cones of Dunshire has been turned from a bit into a game.
Yeah,
it'll be sold at Target at one point in time, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I wonder if there's like a licensed Parks and Rec Monopoly out there or other game out there. That it's like at this point, if that doesn't exist, you can't do that because you have to do the Cones of Dunshire first. Otherwise, people will revolt. But I digress. There are some combats that have even more of a board game theme, in that every time you roll, it will move a piece along kind of a trail that you're working your way down. And you need to move the piece because it'll like break through barriers that allow you to advance. But every space that the piece could land on has a different like effect on the arena. Which is a really cool idea, but I always forgot to look at what the effects would be that it's going to land on. And then didn't really notice the effects while they were happening anyway. It just like, it's a really interesting idea that it doesn't feel like they committed to hard enough to change the way I would, do combat. So, you know, it might spawn a new enemy or have a obstacle that I have to go around. But it never felt like the kind of chess piece moving around with me, was a hugely different experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, so but even with that said, like, I loved the combat, loved the kind of ideas behind it. It is, you know, a high randomness thing, which it should be. It's in the name, right?
Right.
But it feels like they use that intentionally and well. And that's kind of cool to see, because I feel like so many times the first instinct is to try to eliminate randomness in certainly competitive games, or like give players a ton of tools to manage randomness, etc. And this one's just like, we'll just go a little more crazy and loosey-goosey.
Mm-hmm.
So love the combat. The story side of the game gets a lot of attention. Like, you spend a lot of time in cutscenes and dialogue trees, etc. And I want to like it so bad, because the overall aesthetic of the game is really strong. But the dialogue stuff in the game is just not landing for me very well. I was thinking about why ahead of the show, and I think the closest thing I can pin it down to is they have all these like wildly different, crazy and kooky characters in the game, at least visually, but all of them kind of talk and make jokes, et cetera, and have the same personality.
Like, that's a shame.
Or even if it's not the same personality, it feels like there's the same person writing all of them, which there probably was.
Yeah.
But it's like, it just feels like the same voice is behind all of them, even if there are some kind of superfluous differences on the front of it. And so that, you know, and maybe the humor is just not landing for me, or maybe it's actually bad. I don't know. It's always a matter of taste. But that the kind of uniformity of the dialogue feels a little bit at odds with how crazy, diverse, and wacky everything else is in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you spend a lot of time doing dialogue choices. And I've only played it through, you know, 0.5 times so far. So don't, you know, I can't say this with confidence, but a lot of the times it does feel like what you say doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And the particularly egregious example of this is you do extended dialogues with your dice, with Dicey, this character that's kind of your backpack / combat tool.
Okay.
But he only speaks in like R2-D2 bleeps and bloops.
Okay.
And so he'll do like bleeps and bloops, and then you make a dialogue statement, and then he does more bleeps and bloops.
Oh, so they only had to record one set of lines.
And it's like, where's the fun in choosing reactions to something I don't understand?
Yeah.
Like it feels weird. And it's like, okay, well, I'm spending a lot of time in this conversation and being given a lot of choices in this conversation and no tools to actually feel like it means anything.
Right.
Which, you know, just, you spend a lot of time on stuff like that. So
that's a bummer.
if the charm lands for you, I'm sure that's fine. And the charm of the world is landing for me, but the charm of the dialogue is not there in my
opinion.
So, that's Lost in Random. I'm midway through Three Town. So I've not finished the game, but you can guess about how much of it I have left. Given the six-sided die, it's all centered around.
Nice.
Yeah. And that is me. That is what I've been playing. Any questions on Lost in Random?
Is that one that you've been playing with the kids watching? It sounds like a fun one to be,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Which is entertaining as well.
It's good.
Because I think that is the one place the story centeredness of the game works well, is like, that's always fun to, or that is easy for them to engage with.
Yeah.
I don't think they would raise the same complaints that I have, but you know, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, things that are made for kids don't have, you know, it doesn't have to be good.
Mm-hmm. But it can be.
Yeah.
Unless I hold it to that standard.
Yeah. And and those people are ruining it for the rest of them.
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, so you had you had sliding seas and lost in random.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
All right. I got like three or four. All right. Yeah. Some of them I'm going to shoot through because some of them are smaller. First one I got is a small puzzle game called Pondarian. I don't know what they're going for outside of barbarian, but with a pawn, it's kind of clunky. But
pawn,
you know,
like P-A-W-N?
Yeah, like a chess piece. Okay. So this is like a chess puzzle game. I don't know who developed it. I haven't really looked into too much beyond that. But the premise is you're dungeon crawling. You are a piece, not necessarily a chess piece, but you're some type of piece. But you have a deck of cards you cycle through. Each of the cards will have a chess piece on it, like a knight or a pawn or a king or a queen or something like that. And those allow you to move around the chessboard. Okay. You're on a simplified like 5x5 or 6x6 or 7x7 grid. And there's a set of enemies on the board as well. And they have their own moveset where it'll be like they move two spaces and they attack everyone that's one orthogonally away. Or they do this and they leave this behind, but then they attack the ring and stuff like that. So it's like a bunch of like weird rules, but you can hover over any of them to see what they do. And so the premise of the game is it's like a dungeon crawler, as you're trying to get through each of these stages and kill each of the things without taking too much damage yourself. You have like 4 hit points at the beginning of a dungeon. You can increase that as time goes on. In between each dungeon level, there's like a shop level where you can buy an upgrade for your cards or you can buy health. It's an interesting game, kind of. It's like a budget Slay the Spire type thing, maybe. Whereas like the upgrade, it's very simple. Like the upgrades are very simple, and they're not unique to the cards that they're upgrading. Mm-hmm. It's like there's an effect like when you move, you attack everything diagonal from you with one attack, or when you move, you attack everything orthogonal, or when you move, you gain an energy and draw a card. Energy is what you spend when you play cards. Mm-hmm. And so you're using those same upgrades but on different card pieces. So you kind of get it, you know? Like there's not a lot of like interesting interactions that emerge from that, at least I haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. And then they have 3 different dungeons you can go through, I think is what the game entails right now. And so each dungeon kind of has different enemies that have different movesets. And so that's kind of where the interest lies in terms of like certain enemies will punish certain behaviors. Like whenever you draw a card, like they'll get some sort of buff or something like that.
Yeah.
And so you have to try and move and like upgrade your cards to kind of fight around that. It is mildly interesting. I think it's like $5 or $10 on Steam. So
it sounds really similar to it is a roguelike, I think, made. Is it Terry Cavanaugh? Dicey Dungeons. Have you played Dicey Dungeons?
I've heard of it. I have not played it.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a similar deck builder-y. You know, simple deck builder, but with the chess mechanics instead of dice mechanics, like this.
Yeah,
I mean, it sounds, and you know, it sounds neat for the scale of project that it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like a lukewarm review for me. Maybe I'll play it some more, and maybe I'll find some more interest in it. But it's okay.
Yeah,
I'm gonna move on.
Okay.
I continue playing Slipways a little bit. I played a few games over the past week. That's a game that I had played before. That's trading stuff like that.
Yeah, outer space civ-like kind of.
Yeah. I've kind of started to enjoy playing that a little bit more. I've kind of like settled into like how I like to play the game, which is play it for like a half an hour and then quit because I don't feel like I've done perfectly enough and then start over.
Okay.
And for some reason that's fun for me for some reason. But it's, I learned a little bit more of the mechanics too, as far as like paying more attention to what your positive and negative scores are for like happiness and stuff. You get penalized for having idle human resources as opposed to other things.
Okay.
Which I didn't fully realize. So you kind of are incentivized to try and find places for your people. And I don't know, they're just small things that I kind of paid more attention to this time around than before. But that's still an interesting game. I don't know if I'm going to go back through the campaign or not. I like doing like the individual runs, but that's I think a more interesting puzzle game than like Pondberian in terms of like the amount of complexity that's there, and you have to kind of think through some certain things. And it's very very like compact, I guess, where it's like, you know, all you have is a map of planets, and each planet has some conversion of turning this into that, and the rest is you thinking. So it's like, it's just that there's so many possibilities, I guess, is like, that's kind of where the fun of it comes from. Yeah. It's trying to like think through all the ways of like how to get a good like ecosystem going. So
yeah, it set things up in the right ratios. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've enjoyed that a little bit more. I might continue playing that a little bit. All right, I'm gonna keep going on. I've kept playing Storybook Brawl. That game still is pretty awesome. They are doing patch updates, and so they're making updates pretty regularly. They made a patch update a day or two ago where they removed one of the characters from the game because they felt like it was being unbalanced. I think I've described this before. There's like an experience mechanic in the game where every fight you gain one experience point. For every three you level up, there's one character where if they kill another creature, then you gain an experience point. Okay. And so people were using this to kind of rush to the max level and get creatures as a way for winning, which seemed balanced when playing it. But they're actually, they do a lot of dev videos. And so like I watched some of their dev videos on Twitch where they like stream playing it and talking about like the game design and stuff like that. And they're pretty data focused. So they'll talk about like when they're making decisions, they'll be like, well, like this hero has the like lowest win rate, so we're trying to buff that. This hero has the highest win rate, so we're trying to nerf that a little bit. This, you know, so they look at things like that. And so they decided to remove that character because it was, I guess, like breaking the middle game too easily, where it's like people were bypassing the middle game and just skipping to the end.
If they could get there chugging quickly enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they did this as a way to kind of like force you to have more interesting decisions in the middle game and have to actually like pick strategies with those mid-tier characters. So it seems fine. They also did some like minor alterations where they nerfed one hero, but then they buffed some of the characters around the strategy as a way to like kind of even it out. So anyway, I found out too that so it's like three people who founded the company, and I think one or two of them were ex-Magic players, so that kind of makes a lot more sense of like where the game design's coming from and kind of like how it kind of comes from the same ilk, I guess. Because in general, I've kind of tapered off playing like Magic Arena in favor of just playing Storybook Brawl because it kind of scratches the same sort of itch and feels less like gamblery in that you're like paying, you know, paying for a hit or something like that.
At
what rate are they adding new content to the game? Like how often does a new hero come out or new cards or what have you?
So they'll do patches like once every like 2 weeks or once a month, something like that. Okay. And so it'll be like minor changes where it's like, okay, this character's too good at this level. We're going to push up to a level 4 card instead of a level 3 to make it so that's not like as much of a runaway victory. And they're like really conscientious about it too, of like the bigger effects. Like, so one of the things they're talking about is by removing this character that they just removed, the level 3, there's less different characters at level 3, so it's easier to triple them, which is like level them up if you get three of the same kind. And so they're conscientious about these types of decisions, and they'll like kind of talk them through. And they have like a sort of roadmap, like they're, you know, trying to get it on mobile eventually. I mean, I think the game's still early access, but I'm not sure.
All games are permanently early access always, I think.
Oh yeah.
But I've been like pretty happy with the design of that game. Interesting and fun. I haven't leveled up like rankings since last week. So I'm kind of like at where I'm at. If I really want to get to the next level up, because that's when you get like Elo rankings and then you have like a position. So I might try and grind and get there if I want to or something. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to move on. I've talked about that enough.
Storybook Brawl.
You're pretending to be casual so hard right there. We all know you're going to do it.
Well, yeah, we'll see. It's fun. I mean, that's kind of like my default game that I play in the evening if I'm going to play a game. And then the other ones I kind of defer to if I don't. Anyway. All right, there's two new games that I want to talk about that are kind of smaller, medium size. There's one game that I played called There Is No Game: Wrong Dimension.
Okay.
This is a game that I just saw in passing on Steam, a few times, that it had like really high user reviews. So I was kind of interested in it.
Okay.
And so I started playing it. It's basically like a point and click adventure game, kind of. The like conceit of the game is there's a narrator, and I don't know how to place the accent, and it's a joke that nobody can place the accent, but I think it's like it's either like Dutch or Danish or something.
Okay.
It's that sort of European style ish.
Yeah, you got a kind of like a Peter Stormare rolling around.
Yeah, and so the narrator is trying to convince you that there is no actual game to be played. I don't know, maybe in the same vein of Stanley Parable, maybe, but it's kind of like hokey. There's like the main menu, it's like a bunch of arrows pointing to the exit game option, you know, that sort of thing. And so it has that same sort of feeling where it's like the puzzle is like, oh, he doesn't want you to launch the EXE that on this like computer that launches the game or whatever. And so there will be like these like Looney Tune type things to try and prevent you from doing that. It's not a bad puzzle game. They have a nice like hint system built in. So if you get stuck on something too long, it's like gives you progressive hints and you can get past it if you want to. Mm-hmm. It eventually starts boiling into like having like defined like worlds that you go into. There is like a pseudo narrative in the game of like there's a bad guy and there's good guys and sidekicks and stuff like that. So like the last like world, quote unquote, that I was in was a straight up like point and click adventure of like in the theme of like Sherlock Holmes, but it's kind of like it's trying to deconstruct that, I guess, where it's like you're doing puzzle elements within the space. And so I guess as a bit of a spoiler here of giving away the mechanic, but the idea is you're watching a game on a television that's framed in a television set, and you can rotate around to the four views of this television set, to like the side, the front, the back.
Uh-huh.
And eventually you can, but when you look at the front screen, it's like a scene of this point and click adventure in Sherlock Holmes that you can navigate through the scenes there. But it starts getting kind of cool. It's kind of a cool concept where you can tear off the back of the TV and you're seeing the literal back of the set of this point and click adventure that's like built up in wood and like is like a Hollywood set or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're solving puzzles based on that. So like if you scroll around to the back, for example, you might see a piece of like the UI and you can find something to unscrew it, a tool to unscrew it. And then you can use that UI piece to solve other adventure or solve other puzzles in the point and click adventure.
Oh, that's so really clever.
So some of that stuff's like really inventive and interesting. It's kind of feels like almost like a game for kids kind of though.
Uh-huh.
Which isn't necessarily like a deal breaker or anything. But it's just keep that in mind as far as like target audience, it might not be directly for you.
Mm-hmm.
Or for, you know, somewhat of, I don't know, our age, but, it's interesting. So, So I don't know. This is probably another game where it's like, I'll continue to play it and kind of see it to the end, but, Yeah, so I don't know. Anyway, it's kind of interesting.
I love the bullet points on their Steam page. Incredible 3D graphics that are flat, completely flat, and very pixelated.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, it sounds clever and endearing to me.
Yeah, and like I actually, in thinking back on it, I am like, I have, because there's a couple puzzles
you kind of cut out. And thinking back on it, you what?
So in thinking back of it, I'm pretty happy with the hint system that they have, because there's a couple puzzles where the solutions I was trying, I thought would be viable solutions, but they weren't. And so where in another game, I would be like kind of upset with how it was telegraphed and like complain or something like that. It's not really a problem here, because it's like, all right, I'll just click on the hint and like, oh, okay, so you don't even consider this to be important. All right, I'm going to go over here then instead. And like, oh, okay, you're probably thinking of this. And then you can figure it out that way. And so that kind of, for some reason that buys a lot of goodwill with me and kind of like take from what would otherwise be a negative experience. So I do like that aspect. I think that's all I got to say about it.
Nice.
I'm going to go on. Does anyone have any questions about that game?
No.
So there is in fact a game.
From my perspective, yes, but I am constantly told that it's not a game. So I don't know. I have one more thing to talk about, and this is a spooky game.
Ooh.
Right in time for October. I played a multiplayer game with some of my friends last night from college, and we played a game called Devour, which Devour. Is a $5 janky as shit horror game that Twitch streamers are playing right now. And okay. it's pretty fun. Basically, there's three different levels. They all have an enemy who's being possessed by some sort of demon. They have some sort of like long-term goal for you to do. As you complete the goal, the demon gets, or the person being possessed gets like stronger and stronger and more aggressive and violent and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like you have to try and like finish things by the skin of your teeth. So we played two different levels of it. Each playthrough was maybe about an hour, and we did not win either one, but we had a fun time doing it. So in the first one, it's like a weird, I don't know, it's like bloody lady who's very tall. And there's a bunch of baby demonic goats running around a house in an outside area. And you have to catch and sacrifice by burning the baby goats.
I'm sorry, those are called demonic kids.
I was going to go with, you know, tall bloody lady. Are we sure this isn't, you know, Resident Evil? But
that's yeah. All right. Not that tall, I guess. Yeah. And different pronunciation of bloody, I guess. But but yeah, so I don't know. It's like there's this weird, there's like items that will spawn. I don't know if procedurally is the right word or not, but like intermittently items will spawn, and the items are either like a med kit to revive one of your friends. Mm-hmm. You have a UV light that basically just kills things, but it's like a finite amount. I don't know why. It's game mechanic that's like hand wavily explained. Mm-hmm. But there's like batteries to charge your flashlights so that you can more longly kill someone with a UV light, and
gives you more ammo, more flashlight ammo.
Yeah. And
I like more longly kill them.
And there's bales of hay which you use to attract the demon kids, and before you set them on fire and put them in a thing. Oh yeah, and there's gasoline too. You need gasoline and the goat to make the sacrifice happen.
Of course, yeah. The goat's not going to burn itself.
Yeah, and so all the time that you're doing this, like as you're sacrificing more and more goats, the lady, I forget her name, it's like Ashley or something like that. It's like a very generic name, but she's like person who's possessed. Gets more and more upset. She basically goes into rage mode, kind of like a barbarian in D&D. You want to steer clear during that time. She'll like just charge you. You can shine a light at her, and that'll work to slow her down like once or twice, but then her eyes will turn red and then the light does not do anything. So you need to like sprint away and try and like run behind a door and shut it or something like that.
Yeah.
Shutting doors doesn't always work. I think when they get certain level, they just start knocking those down and coming after you.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so the metagame is that you're trying to, it's pretty frequent that you get caught and like downed by the demon. So like the metagame is like you have to manage like, okay, I'm trying to find a goat and like so and so is near you, can you like walk, can you crawl over to a med kit so they can revive you really quickly and stuff like that, and you're trying to like balance these sorts of things. Yeah, but it's a co-op game and it's like fun and it's janky. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm down with it.
It looks spooky. Like it looks that like there's a good enemy designs and good set designs and stuff like that.
It shamelessly takes from Subnautica, where when the demon catches you or whatever, it just snaps to them like screaming and shaking their head in the face. And it does make you jerk and scream and whatever, at least for me. And then they have a weird they have like a weird like Dead by Daylight type system where after so many games that you play, you get like these like XP type points that you can invest in skills you can unlock on people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's how they try and make it like more like long-term play and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then the second map we played was, it takes place in like a Japanese like hotel. They call it like an inn. And it's right next to a cave, and there's a lady that is turned into a spider demon that chases you around. And that's that's the latest patch that they've added. And that level actually kind of showed some improvement where there's like hiding spots you can get in to try and stay away from them. But then the bad person will sometimes check hiding spots, like not not all the time, but sometimes. So they're not like a silver bullet. And so that's kind of cool because it creates tension because you're in a hiding spot. You hear them like immediately outside and you don't know if they're going to check yours or not. And then the interesting thing is if they do check and like down you, it destroys the hiding spot. So you have less and less like hiding spots on the map as the game progresses. Nice.
Yeah.
And then there's like,
is there any way to tell if they're going to check it or like what's, what is your recourse to,
No, there's not. But I mean, like getting caught isn't like a fail condition because you have other people. So it just changes that people just need to revive you.
Yeah.
And then the long-term goal there is you're cleaning off these like spider eggs and then burning them at altars. But each of the altars has a different symbol on it. So you have to like match the egg with the altar. And so,
I'm noticing a lot of burning in this.
I mean, who doesn't solve their problems with fire? I mean, call me an arsonist, but
okay,
I'm an arsonist, guys.
I mean, that makes things easy for me. Nice.
Yeah.
No.
So this has been fun. This has been a fun game to play. I think I'm trying to do like spooky games every week in October. Mm-hmm. So
nice.
Probably will. Circle back around. I played a little bit of Phasmophobia, but I'm not going to talk about it. But they have some updates and it's still fun.
Yeah, they were adding new spirit types, right?
Yeah, and the UI is like much better. They add a new like models for all the items that look nicer. That's the good. Journals like functional now. It's very very nice. Yeah.
You still a limbo?
No, they have a sprint mechanic in it as well now, where you can sprint for a little bit, then you get winded, but your walk in it now is equivalent to the sprint before.
Oh, that's good.
But you can actually sprint in this one now in Phasmo.
Nice.
So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was there ever any like commentary or admission from that of like, yes, we know this was terrible, here's why, or anything like that?
I think it was matching like what you. So I think.
Matching what you want.
Matching what you could do in VR in terms of like how fast you can move.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I think that was the conceit of it. So I think it was just fixing that. At the same time, it's like one dude who made that game, so I don't really expect the world from him.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. He probably didn't expect it to be that big.
Yep.
Yeah. Which creates its own problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. No, Devour sounds cool. There is no game sounds cool.
Yeah. Not bad.
Yeah.
Do you want to do level spooky games? Devour is a good option.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I need to see. I'm going to be finishing up Rule of Rose here pretty soon, hopefully.
Yeah.
David, how about you?
I haven't been doing a whole heck of a lot, actually. I don't know if I mentioned on the pre-roll, I've got LARP this weekend, so I've been getting ready for that, and then getting ready for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
So, mostly I ducked back into Warframe.
Okay.
So, you know, that's kind of my periodic addiction. I've been trying out the new open world setting. So, basically, this time around, they had a open world related to the Corpus, which like the Hypercapitalists, the Grineer, which are the Clone Warrior, army, and then this is now the third enemy faction that are the Infested.
Okay.
And these are basically, you know, I guess, you know, kind of your general Zerg type aliens.
Okay.
So it's pretty cool because, you know, it's all just weird, biological settings. You can actually tame some of the animals that are just these weird, like, parasite-ridden wolves and, like, fox cat things.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a lot of, you know, creepy biological body horror. They also added a new feature that is what's called a necromech, which are apparently were the original, like, war grade models of your warframes. And so basically now
so your warframes are not war grade.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So I guess some of this gets into the lore, but it's the idea of, do we want massively powerful things or slightly less powerful things with intelligence? And yeah, so, but the long story short is now you can ride a mech in your mech or something.
and this game.
Yeah, and they also look like something from Warhammer 40K. Like, you know, they're all skulls and, you know, yeah, stuff like that. It's a very, very weird.
Everyone knows that a mech's power is directly proportional to the number of skulls on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like racing skulls. Stripes on a car. They just go faster.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, in Warhammer 40K, that's literally true. If you play as the orc faction, racing stripes make your vehicles go faster.
Weird.
That is phenomenal.
But anyways, yeah. So
I would have expected the skull thing in Warhammer 40K, not the racing stripe thing.
Yeah, yeah, that was
so betting. One of the factions are orcs, and all of they're basically latently psionic. And so none of their technology actually works. It only works because they believe it works.
Oh, huh.
And so because they believe, I think it's actually, it might not be racing stripes. It might be the color red, but it's something about like the paint job, because they believe it makes their vehicles go faster. It does.
Oh, but it also causes them to get pulled over more often and pay higher insurance rates.
That's a really fun idea. That's like I'm remembering something from Terry Pratchett about transportation that was a hovercraft that hovered over water, and they basically just made these wizards really afraid of water, so that they would do anything to stay off of it, and so then they threw them on the water and they hovered above it.
So it's got a little bit of a lore bit. All of the characters that kind of, so each of these open world areas also have a associated settlement. They have all your quest givers, things like that. And in this case, all of the quest givers are basically infected versions of what's sort of like the precursor race in Warframe.
Okay.
And I believe that's the first time in the series you've actually met any of the precursors, or at least semi-debatably. So yeah, here's your random reminder that in spite of all this craziness and action and stuff, Warframe actually has a pretty legitimate story.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, most of it ends up being about family, which is really weird.
I was going to go with the power of friendship.
So it's like the Fast and the Furious instead of anime?
Yeah, it's family, except somehow that always ends up going straight to Lovecraftian horror. It's a very strange game.
Yeah.
Look, Fu has family.
Yeah, Cthulhu. He does. Related to Haster, yeah, they're all spawned from Yogg-Sothoth, yeah. I can keep going if you want. August Derleck wrote some really dumb shit.
Yeah, this traps. So that's the main thing. The only other thing, I finally unlocked Ivara, which is a stealth and archery oriented frame that I've been trying to get forever.
Archery.
Okay, we need to play a new game, which is going to be called Warframe or Elder God. Because that name could have gone either way.
Oh yeah, totally.
What was the name of this thing? Of the mech?
Necromech.
Necro, okay, yeah.
Not that Necro. There's an A instead of an O for some reason.
Yeah, so it'll go faster. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the mission types is spy, which is basically there's three data terminals that you have to get to without setting off the alarms. However, in your way are a series of obstacles, so like laser tripwires, security cameras, guards, things like that. Some of the more extreme ones, it's even like pseudo portal style, like you have to shift to different dimensions, or there's one where you have to like shoot out pipes in order to raise the water level.
Okay.
But in order to get the parts to create this warframe, you have to, on the hardest difficulty of these missions, you have to get all three perfectly. And even then, there's only like a 5% drop rate, something Whoa. Like that.
Yeah, that sounds so needlessly hostile. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, well, to be fair, part of it is this frame completely trivializes those missions.
Okay, so you need to be thoroughly done with them by the time you get right. this, because, yeah.
So one of the things is, like, the way I got through it is I have Ash, which, compared to Ivari, is an incredibly normal name.
Okay.
But is basically their theme is like ninja, and so they have a stealth. Pokemon training? Say that again?
Said that their theme isn't Pokemon training?
Not Pokemon training.
Yeah.
But they, you know, that's Korra. Korra is the Pokemon trainer. So they have a stealth ability. However, it and all the other stealth abilities in the game will still activate tripwires if you walk through them. However, Ivara has the only stealth ability that doesn't, so you can basically just walk through all the obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is she's actually one of my favorite character designs. Most of the Warframes have something that they're designed off of, but it's very abstract. So her design is based on like a tree frog. And so she has kind of like a hood, you know, like Huntress style hood, but that's designed to sort of, suggest kind of the shape of a frog's head.
Okay.
So it's just a really cool design. Her prime version is a similar thing, except the hood is designed to look like a jellyfish.
Ooh.
So yeah, so really cool character. I like it a lot. Unfortunately, I'm not sure I'll actually end up using it much outside of stealthy things because I'm not a huge fan of bows.
Oh.
But bows
seem like a weird fit for mechs.
I mean, to be fair,
swords seem like a weird fit for mechs.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, swords, nunchucks, whips.
Yeah, yeah. And even Gundams had whips, or at least that one did. Epion.
That is true.
Yeah.
So. So that's kind of the thing. I think the Halloween event starts tomorrow.
Okay.
I have no idea what that entails.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean the game is already very much, well, has some very strong horror elements.
I mean, you describe Zerg-like stuff and, you know, dead mechs and things. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think my favorite is still the Corpus community is all made up of people that basically were indentured workers that in attempts to be able to like do enough work to pay off their debts have augmented themselves with cybernetics to the points where they're pretty much 100% robot.
Okay. Does it have like a Shadowrun kind of thing where like they lose all their humanity at that point, or?
Not so much, but it's to the point where literally even their heads are like these square kind of robot heads.
Huh.
And they've all got this weird sort of kind of shutter thing. Sort of looks like a garage door type thing in their chest.
Okay.
And when you max, this is a little bit of a spoiler, when you max out the faction with them, they're like, oh, okay, we now feel comfortable enough around you to like reveal our two selves, and those all open up, and that's where their head is.
Oh. Hey, literally my just eyes like, are down here.
Yeah, just disembodied head.
Oh, that's funny.
So yeah, there's a lot of just random creepy shit in this.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I just still shocked at how generous those devs are. And just the hearing the changes and the new stuff that is added in is neat. Just that game is as well supported as it is this far on. Mm-hmm. Nice.
That's showing
No Man's Sky how it's done.
I don't have an awful lot. I've been playing an idle game because I've been so busy doing work stuff that like I've just kind of wanted to check something out. So I saw people playing a game called NGU Industries, which kind of piqued my interest because like it's not like like an adventure capitalist kind of idle game or, you know, just like other ones that I've played that are like Dark Room or whatever, where it's you are just like selecting upgrades off of a list, trying to make the number get bigger. It actually ends up working out it's a little bit management simmy because you start out with just like one map that's like a grid. And you place little, like factories, like little, icons that will generate a certain material that will be, used to, you know, be used as, input for another, kind of material. And you are, spending those, spending those materials to, create special items that you can use for like research to make to improve like the speed or efficiency or productivity of the others, and you access these beacons that you can place around the map that have different shaped like areas of effect. So like this ends up being like a fun little kind of like logic or base building kind of game because you end up, where you place stuff ends up mattering because you kind of create these zones where, if you place something, if you overproduce in one thing, that's going to be a drag on something else, which will be a drag on something else. So you end up having all of these kind of dependencies. It's real neat. It's got kind of a, if you look at it, it has a real kind of like intentionally crappy looking aesthetic to it. Like it's real MS Paint style thing. And there is like a story and there is writing and stuff to it, but it's kind of all like shitpost kind of stuff. You know, it's like meant to be sci-fi, but also, just jokes. Like when you unlock combat, so you send off, your little army guys that you develop, you send them off to the isopod to fight, and isopod stands for infinite shed of pissed off dudes. which is very good. One of the currencies you can accumulate is badly drawn starmen or BDSM. so that's kind of what we're working at. It's pretty juvenile, but like as far as idle games go, a game where you're just kind of meant to like check in on it every once in a while to make sure that everything is laid out and you're still working toward your goals and making sure you get there faster so you're not wasting time creating resources that you don't need. This is like one of the more engaging ones of those that I have that I have played. Not that I've been like a connoisseur of the form or anything like that, but it has been nice and fun, and it's creative. Yeah.
So would you say, does playing an idol game constitute idolatry?
No, it's I mean, it's definitely sloth. Yeah. But like, yeah, just like it's one of those things where just like the names of things is just the, you know, kind of the joke to it. So like, okay, you need to make cardboard, but everything has to come from an ore. So there's cardboard ore, and then you unlock the flesh world, and like stuff ends up being made out of bones and meat. So there's meat ore, which is just a steak. And you can make bone bars, but you need bone ore, which is just a carton of milk. And the description of it is they're just like, oh, this is a funny idea. We're just going to make the description us laughing at us having thought this up. So it's neat. I didn't know that there were idle games that were like this. So this is kind of satisfying a little bit of my base building optimization management desire to go back in and fiddle with it and then just put it away and come back later.
Nice.
Yeah. But other than that, it's all been trying to get ahead because we got big stuff coming up, and yeah. Big stuff coming up on other shows, trying to get through Grime, trying to get ready for all that stuff. Any other questions about NGO Industries?
No, sounds cool.
All right, that's the segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where usually we ask you a question and then you answer it, but we had that Facebook outage on the day when we would normally post, and Jala suggested, hey, how about we do a free play cleanup? So I went back and grabbed some questions that I'm pretty sure we didn't answer from previous free plays. This is going to be a short one, honestly, because this is going to have to be an early night for us. But I will get us started here. And let's get started with OMG Amboose, who asks, if you could give any classic console networking in the modern sense, a.k.a. Xbox Live, Steam, PlayStation Network, which system would you do that to and why?
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
I feel like most generations would probably say like whatever console they played multiplayer. Like N64 is the immediate one that jumps to mind for me.
Yeah.
But I imagine like younger people would say GameCube for like similar reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And mine would be PlayStation 1, same generation, but just that's the console I had growing up. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say Super Nintendo. Because it would be fun to like have matchmaking for like Super Bomberman, for Tetris Attack. Like both of those were multiplayer games that I really enjoyed. That there's not really a great version of them that you can that you can spring for right now. You know,
I think GoldenEye was the one that I was thinking of in terms of how much I would want to play on with network.
Yeah,
so I really liked Gauntlet Legends. That was my jam.
Oh yeah, yeah,
sure.
What about does Pokemon even now have like straight up, you know, ability to trade and battle people over the internet?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so they did eventually fix that. All right, sweet.
Yes, they've had a version of that at least since Diamond and Pearl, the first DS ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, I think the Game Boy would be a solid like runner up.
Yeah. Nice. Let's do another one here. Christian asks, favorite collector's edition.
Ooh.
Yeah. Do you have a collector's edition that came with cool stuff or like with stuff that you have kept around?
I can only think of one collector's edition that I own.
Oh, which is it?
It would be Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh,
And I guess it's like the digital collector's edition, so a little bit lame, but it had had the digital art book, okay. Which I actually did enjoy browsing, mm-hmm. especially early on.
Yeah.
Should go back and look through that. but yeah, that's the only one I own, so I guess that has to be my answer.
Yes. I mean, mine would be BioShock. Like that was a cool package, had the soundtrack and stuff with it, and of course it had the statue, which gave us the notion of a tipless daddy, which is still every time I see that on the shelf, I just kind of chuckle like we said something ghastly. Yeah, I didn't bother to send that Big Daddy statue in to get the drill fixed because no, it has to be a tipless daddy. Come on. What am I doing here? What's the point of this?
It's not a bug, it's a feature.
Anybody else?
I got a weak answer because I don't think I bought any collection, but I'll say the Halo 3 case was pretty cool because it was metal-y.
Oh, the steel case?
Yeah. That's all I got. Pretty weak.
I've been buying just because sometimes it's a last minute decision, like, yeah, I'll pick that up. But like Best Buy, if you pick up a new game, especially if you pre-order it, they'll just like give you a steel case box with it, whether you want it or not. And so like I've already got way too many game cases, to the point where like, okay, I've got to find a place to store them because I take them and put the games in little albums and stuff. But like, yeah, no, just so here I've got the plastic case and then just a steel box case that I don't feel 100% good just throwing out. It's a real, they just keep on saddling me with that. I don't know who's chasing after those steel cases.
I was gonna say neither does Best Buy apparently.
Yeah, no, there's getting rid of them. I haven't had a chance to play it, but I went and bought Deathloop, and they just gave me the game, and I was like, okay, cool, fine, I'm gonna take that home and install it, and then not play it for a while because I've got other stuff, and then like I get a text message, your item is here, and I was like, oh, what is it? So next time I was in town, went over to Best Buy, I was like, hey, there's an order here for me. Like, oh, it's your Deathloop steel case. Like, I feel really burned that I took the extra step to get this thing that I don't want. Yeah. Oh yeah, man,
I'm not sure. I mean, so I have
the government subsidizes steel cases.
Yeah, big for industry in Wyoming. What was that, David?
So I have bought a couple of collector's editions. I think the original Guild Wars, and I think technically, EverQuest.
Okay.
But or that wasn't, I don't know, that's some sort of
EverQuest, they had some good good collector stuff, like the collector's edition of Planes of Power came with a little figure of Furio Navai, the elf princess that was kind of the mascot for the series. Yeah,
I know this one had like a cloth map, which was kind
of
cool.
Yeah, oh, that was nice. Probably Shadows of Lucklin that came with a cloth map.
I think that's what I'd like to see more of is, I don't know, I like, there are definitely games I would be interested in, getting something cool, but it seems like most of the stuff is kind of chintzy, little, like, I don't know, keychains and shit.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I don't know, something... If it was just something I could hang up that would look professional quality,
mm-hmm.
or like, I don't know, a coffee table book or something,
yeah,
like then I'd be all about that.
Check out stuff from Limited Run Games. They tend to do really good collector's edition stuff.
Okay, I'll check that out.
Yeah. Who knows if they're currently publishing anything that you like, but they tend to go all out when they have a big title.
I did find one of the clothing companies that like has a line of Bloodborne clothing.
Hmm.
Like what? not like shirts with the Bloodborne logo, but like weird like long jackets and stuff.
Hmm. I don't know what to make of that. I'm just gonna bring the tricorns back.
I mean, mm-hmm. I'd be all about that.
David asks, have you ever lost your save file and or game data, characters, etc.? And if so, which one was the most painful?
Oh, man.
I have not.
Oh, so you have never suffered that crushing loss?
Nope.
Oh, lucky you.
That's because you compulsively keep like 32 backup saves, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I roll. Also, now everything's on the cloud, so
yeah, it's pretty hard unless there's like some kind of like fluke overwrite or whatever. Yeah. Pretty hard to meaningfully lose data today. The time when it was most upsetting for me, the Super Nintendo, like most cartridge-based game systems, they had the saves in a battery backup on the cartridge itself, right? There was no memory card, there was no, you know, memory expansion pack like you had on the N64 or whatever. On certain Super Nintendos and with certain games, there was just a problem where if there was any kind of like impact or jostling, some contact would be broken between the game and the system when the system was on that would cause the game to reset and also completely blank out the internal memory. And so I was like on the next to last dungeon in Zelda Link to the Past. And I got super angry because I died to a boss or it was some kind of bullshit or whatever. And I got angry and I turned off the system just a little bit too violently. And that caused the save to wipe. Near the end and I was so annoyed, so pissed off. I didn't go back and replay it. In fact, I traded the game in. Like the next time I went and traded stuff away, I was like, yeah, I'm never playing this thing again. I'm never going to beat that. So I traded it away. I really wish that I would have kept that. So that was a real bummer. It kind of my fault for losing my patience, but also, you know, the system itself. Yeah.
I'd say it would, yeah, if you were like trying to break something because you were angry, then serves you right. But just a little love tap is a steep penalty for that.
Yep. Has nobody else had that happen to them?
I've overwritten saves or saved it incredibly inconvenient places.
Yeah.
The one that sticks out in my mind is Parasite Eve.
Oh,
I somehow overwrote my final save like right before the end boss and saved with like criminally low health.
Oh yeah.
And no way to get back out and like farm items or do anything.
No, you saved on the boat and there was that long run of mm-hmm. of like instant death where you're being chased. Then you have the final mm-hmm. boss. Yeah, no, that's a nightmare. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. and so that was kind of like you had, Cole, the moment of like, well, I'll go look up a video of how this ends because yep. I am not finishing this gameplay wise.
I got the YouTube ending. Great.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Nice. And Ben, you did a charmed life as well.
Well, no, that actually reminds me. I think I have a.
You cut out?
I was like, I have a similar story as Dennis for Horizon Zero Dawn. I think I went over it on the podcast when it happened, but I got into a state where I was at a boss fight where I had too low health and I was just going to die. And I didn't have a save file to get out. And so like the last save was like 3 or 4 hours before that. And so I just kind of stopped there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Simple. So Cole, your story remind me, I definitely did lose some runs of Zelda from the whole like hold down the reset button while powering off thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you're not used to doing that, it's real hard to remember to do it. Yeah. Well, on the old NES. So weird. It's so weird how they like just hacked together password free game saves. Like, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Let's do one more game related one and then do a couple of fun ones. Let's see here. Callum asks, what classic game do you wish had a sequel or another sequel if it's a series? Slightly cheating, but for my own answer, is wishing that Shining Force 3 had been released in a way that I could play. Either that or Guardian Heroes 2 being a thing. I'd like a new Rock Band. I wish that plastic instrument rhythm games made a comeback. Probably not going to happen, but yeah, that's where I'm at.
I think if Magi Nation could get a good sequel,
was there a second one of those?
Huh?
Was there a second Magi Nation?
There was a second one, but rather than being a endearing, fully fleshed out RPG, it was a kind of generic puzzle game.
Oh, weird.
And then apparently a MMO that was kind of shit.
Huh. That's disappointing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, the genre cash-in affects mine as well. I'm waiting for XCOM to get a proper sequel to XCOM 2 rather than... I mean, I enjoyed Chimera Squad, but it was kind of this weird offshoot. Mm-hmm. And then the latest XCOM game was like a really crappy mobile port.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I would love to have a strategy game instead of a gacha cash-in, but that studio is now working on like a Marvel game.
Yeah, that Marvel game looks like it's going to be pretty good, though.
You know, I can't disagree with you on that.
Yeah,
I want my XCOM.
Yeah,
I'm just happy if Firaxis game's coming out. I trust in them.
Yeah, nice.
But I want to trust in them, Commander.
Ben, how about you?
I'm a little bit torn. I kind of want a Knights of the Republic sequel. I'd be happy with that. I would like a proper Shadow of the Colossus sequel. But I guess I never played what came out of that, so who knows?
Yeah, you never played Last Guardian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't want to be disappointed. But yeah, so I'll go with Knights of the Republic. That'll be sweet.
Yeah, if they're doing they're doing that remake.
The remake. Yeah.
But yeah, it would be nice to have a continuation. I have no idea what to think of that remake.
It would probably be something like the Arrested Development series, but
oh yeah.
In my mind, and since it's never going to come out, we'll just say yeah, Knights of the Republic 3 would have been awesome.
That's the thing. Yeah. We just if it exists as nothing but infinite potential in your head, that is its own kind of blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And let's do some fun ones. We got a couple of food questions here. Christopher asks, tacos, what do you want on yours?
Ooh.
Yeah. I always like a nice marinated, steak and some fajita vegetables, is really good. Just a good, good pepper and onion.
My go-to is, steak, street style tacos with cilantro.
Okay.
And you have to have that lemon juice and whatever the kind of tangy avocado based like sauce is.
Guacamole?
No, it's like it's thin. It's like salsa consistency.
Huh. I've never had
that. Is it like Dona, but that's like creams and jalapeno.
I don't know. I just know it's green and tangy and delicious.
Huh. Okay. I mean, is it for sure? Are you talking about like a salsa verde, or does it absolutely have avocado in it?
Maybe it's salsa verde. I assume that all slimy green Mexican food is avocado.
Avocado in disguise. Yeah. Can you hear Dottie?
Sorry. I cannot.
Yeah, she's doing a parade with her toy. She carries her favorite toy around the house in her mouth and meows because she wants people to look at her. Yeah, she has
taco opinions.
Dennis, how about you? Taco opinions?
I love me a fish taco.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything with that, really, but the more crunchy veggies on it, the better.
Yeah.
I am really, really turned off by any slimy veggies.
Oh, okay.
Like the way they're cooked is very important to me, or rather not cooked. So like the raw, crunchier, the better on a taco.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Also, point of order. Yes, salsa verde is apparently what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah, I like a good salsa verde, like nice and tart. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ben.
Yeah, so if I make it myself, I can do breakfast tacos to my liking. Oh,
breakfast taco sounds a breakfast taco would punish right now.
Otherwise, it's based on the place of the city. So Seattle, Taco Chuki's is great. Austin, Taco Deli and Torchy's are great. Mm-hmm. And El Primo is good.
Torchy's was the place that we went when I was down there, right? Yeah,
yep. Torchy's is great.
Yeah. I remember enjoying that. Yeah.
Yeah, local place is
we've got another one here. Elliot asks, in your opinion, what is the most overrated breakfast dish? I'm gonna say pancakes.
You get right out.
I will never turn my nose up at a pancake. It takes a lot for a pan. Like there are very few times when a pancake has been anything special for me. They're a good staple, but then again, you can call me crazy because I don't like I generally don't favor a sweet breakfast, you know?
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the reason you are wrong is that the the greatest
excellent intro, by the way.
Yeah, the greatest seasonally appropriate breakfast for right now is candy corn pancakes. Ooh. Just like making chocolate chip pancakes, except with candy corn.
That sounds like it would be just vilely sweet. Yeah.
Think of Grandma.
Yeah, I have a friend down here that makes candy corn mead.
Okay.
Oh.
Huh.
Is there a follow up to that? Is it good?
My curiosity and revulsion are about equal right now. So.
Yeah, I haven't tried it yet. It is the season, so I'll probably be trying it soon.
Okay. Nice thing about that is you can pour a little bit into a small glass. A pancake, you know, those tend to come in stacks. You know, you can't just order, like, can I get a taster? Can you bring me a flight of silver dollar candy corn pancakes, please?
I like the idea that to get less pancake, you don't get less of them, you just make them smaller.
Yeah. It is a nonsense food is the thing. If I'm doing a sweet breakfast, it's going to be French toast all the way.
French toast is pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm going to catch flack for my opinion. I don't like eggs.
Oh,
huh. Strong. Yeah. As a breakfast food.
Yeah.
I don't get excited about omelets. I don't love scrambled eggs or anything. Like, you know, I'm not going to say no to them. I don't revile them, but in terms of overrated, I certainly would put eggs in that category.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. I just, eggs are so versatile is the thing.
Yeah,
like a good
mix them into things, that's fine, but just straight eggs,
like
if you mix them into things, you're good,
right?
Don't mix things into them or have them plain.
How do you feel about a huevos ranchero?
Ooh, that's tough.
Yeah,
I like it, but I don't mean to tempt everything else.
You're there for the salsa and for the tortilla. I don't mean to like trick you into contradicting yourself. I'm just curious, you know.
Objection!
you only say that because I passed your test.
go ahead, David.
So, I would say grits. However, my friends down here have informed me that apparently that's just because I haven't had the right grits. So I think I'm going to have to go with, overall, I love breakfast food, but I think the most vile, maybe one of the most vile, foods ever is Bloody Marys.
Okay. Yeah. I'm generally in line with you on that. I don't like a Bloody Mary because I don't like I don't like tomato sauce or tomato juice very much.
So I think, to be fair, I've only had them in Baltimore and
So it's probably like a Caesar then or something.
Old Bay seasoning.
Oh, that's way too salty. No, I don't like. I can't brook a salty beverage.
Yep.
Yeah. So you know,
wait, is there anyone on this podcast who likes Bloody Marys?
No, not for me.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's not a. It's it, no.
We've found the keystone of our campaign platform.
I think so.
we still have to ask Jala.
Yeah.
We although she's vegan, so she can't drink blood.
I think I understand why you don't like blood.
Yeah, I think I do too. Yeah, no, a lot is opening up for me right now in the lore. Yeah, no, if I like the traditional morning drinks, you know, your brunch drinks, I am much more a fan of a screwdriver.
I really like champagne based cocktails. So mimosa is where it's at for me.
Yeah, yeah, mimosas give me a headache.
So to kind of contradict you guys, the thing I don't like about breakfast, and I'm just gonna say like brunch as a whole, in that I'm not trying to get drunk at like 10 or 11 in the morning.
That's a thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely too old for that shit. But yeah. I do think underappreciated is the British / Irish breakfast.
Okay. You know, you like getting a blood pudding?
I spent 2 weeks just now eating that.
Yeah, baked beans and all that stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
The puddings in Ireland, I liked them all.
Nice.
With black and white pudding.
It would be hard for me to bring myself around. There's a certain amount of knowing what it is that would that makes me a little bit squeamish.
See, you know? What I've always wanted to do is do the math and figure out how many black puddings I would need to eat to gain a level in D&D rules.
Just to really make sure everyone is ooked out, what I learned on the trip is that the origins of the black pudding, which anyone listening who hasn't heard of that, it's basically a sausage. They call pudding sausage over there, or call sausage pudding. But it's sausage with like blood as an element. So
yeah,
it's the black. But it started with like, you know, it's a poverty food. And they would literally like go nick a cow or like cut, you know, one of their animals, bleed it out a little bit, and then mix that with oats rather than kill the animal for the meat.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh man, but yeah, this is kind of good.
Yeah. I was going to make the joke that like, oh yeah, it was because they just really didn't like Jewish people, because blood isn't kosher. But then I realized, oh, that time period, like that might actually
have been it. Yeah, that might have been some weird medieval test. Yeah. Well, I'm yucked out. I don't like thinking about that. I'm just sad for those cows, which is weird because like my way of eating a sausage would result in the animal dying. So, you know, he just said it's the dissonance we live in as omnivores.
Humans are the real vampires.
Yep. They have porphyria. Yeah. Nice. Well, that was a good good free play. Those are old questions. I am happy that we got to those. Thank you for writing those in. Sorry it took us for a long time to get to those, but better late than never. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
Assuming the site has not mysteriously gone down.
Yes, or assuming we don't learn something more ghastly about the service and stop using it altogether.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the game. No, not the games. Sorry, we had there was more time than usual between that between those segments there. No, the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. My story is just a PSA, but it's also follow up on the state of the PSN store on the PlayStation 3 and the PS Vita. Though Sony relented of their plans to close down those shops, there is a change coming to it on the 27th, where you will still be able to buy things, but you will not be able to use credit cards to add money to your account through those systems itself. Instead, what you'll have to do is actually use the web, either in desktop or your mobile, or on your PS4 or PS5, or use PlayStation Store gift cards if you are choosing not to put your credit card into the Sony family of online services. Yeah, so that is an extra step, but if you're still going back and playing games on those older systems, you probably, you know, expect there to be a little bit more of a hassle anyway. But it is good that there is still a backdoor to officially get stuff that is only available on those systems.
Yeah, I have to imagine this is somehow like shunting the thing that was causing them to want to close the stores down in the first place into a corner, like getting rid of that thing as a workaround to keep it up.
Yeah, makes it
such an odd restriction.
Yeah, it must also be like a security or like a regulation or like compatibility kind of thing, like literally the authorization old systems. Just like it might not function anymore, or would be difficult to keep functioning. Yeah, and I'd rather them pull it than have it be insecure. So
I wonder what items on these stores I would want to pick up. Actually, I know there was a PS Vita game I believe called it's not Sundered. Sundered was the other
Metroidvania
game.
Yeah,
it was something like Sundered. Mm-hmm. Was the name, and I'm so mad that I can't think of it right now.
Yeah.
But there was a PS Vita game that was designed explicitly for it.
Hmm.
And it was on PlayStation Plus, and just that month I forgot to download.
Oh dang.
The title, and then out of spite never bought it and played it, even though it was one of like the system sellers for PS Vita. Just because like, damn it, I missed it for free, so now I feel bad buying it for money.
Mm-hmm.
What game was that? I'm gonna look that up now, but anyway,
good.
Yeah,
it's gonna kill you.
It's making me curious, like what on those stores remains to be bought.
There's like PlayStation Classic stuff would be the, like, it's the only way to get those if you want to buy them legitimately, as opposed to emulating them, or if you want to play them on a portable, like that's a legit thing to want to do with your PS Vita, you know. Yeah.
Indeed.
David, what's Netflix up to?
Sure. So Netflix bought, I think it's Night School Games, which is the company that made Oxenfree?
Oxenfree and After Party, yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize they made After Party.
Yeah.
Both good stuff. So they apparently want to branch out into games, and those are going to be included as part of the Netflix subscription.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's all that was said. They're also releasing some mobile games, but apparently only in Europe. I don't know.
It's standard practice now to like soft launch mobile games in other countries or smaller countries, just to kind of get a feel and use the information from that to polish the final product.
Yeah.
Yep. So I imagine as long as they are successful in the small countries they are launching, they will eventually come here.
What would you play those games on? Oxenfree and such? Like, is it a web client? Like, I still don't understand like Netflix's angle on it.
I figured this is just the Xbox Game Pass, except a different person gets money.
Yeah. No, it's still confusing to me.
Maybe it'll be something like Annapurna Publishing, where it's just like, hey, games.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what we're doing.
Let's see, Dennis, what's going on with them damn monkeys?
Yeah, Super Monkey Ball is a game that I have not thought about in a long time. but they just had a new entry come out, and it looks really, really fun. And it basically, it's a remaster of the Monkey Ball trilogy. But in going back and looking at videos of this, I was reminded of just how great the mini games for Monkey Ball are. So to have access to those on the current gen is worth it in and of itself.
Yeah.
But if you like me, ever built marble puzzles out of Legos, then you will enjoy playing Super Monkey Ball. But yeah, it's kind of incredible as I've gone through the videos of the mini games that are in this. I'm like, oh, that was in my head as like a separate game I played way back that when that was just Super Monkey Ball. Yeah. Like 90% of my gaming was apparently Super Monkey Ball inspired here early in my childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you liked Super Monkey Ball or like just fun little arcade games, check it out. Yeah. I will say the trailer that they put out for it has like goes back and forth between like the game elements and then like a little animated elements. Mm-hmm. And I'm really wanting an animated filter for this game because the animated stuff looks delightful.
Yeah. Get some nice cell shading in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
You said you wanted a shorter show. I don't get anything.
There we go. Jolly did post something. There is a new game coming from the people who made The Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker, Dark Knights of Poe Monroe, those fun FMV kind of campy horror games. They've announced a new game, Murderous Muses. So that is a creator who enjoy. Go and check those out. I am not sure. What's that, David?
Does it have Inspector Jinxy?
No, I want Inspector Jinx back. He's I want the continuation of Contradiction. That's a good game. they've announced it. It'll be coming out in late 2022. Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is meta, but I love that the site that y'all linked to for this story is fmvworld.com. Mm-hmm. Implying not only that there is a fan site dedicated to FMV, but that Jala frequents them and gets her news from there.
Yeah. So I could see it.
That makes me happy.
How do y'all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
All right. I'm going to keep the section short. You know what to do to help us out. Go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and leave ratings or reviews. Tell your friends all of those good things. Most of all, we would like you to come back next week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Am I forgetting anything big?
Nothing big.
Okay. I've been Cole Ross. You can catch me on Twitter @ColeRoss.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me, let's go on Instagram @DeckOfWonders.
I will be David Mysmith.
At least that's your plan.
True. And I've been Ben Merkel.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. Okay, I have two. I have More Longly Kill Them. And I have my eyes are down here.
I have my eyes are down here as well.
Okay.
Let's see. I've got Call Me an Arsonist. Which I like because it's like, hey, call me an arsonist, or you can call me an arsonist.
Yeah.
And then Ride a Mech in Your Mech. And then, okay, of course, Taco Opinions.
I have Hawaii Doesn't Count and Light of Silver Dollar Pancakes.
I also have, but I have it phrased as, hey, my eyes are down here, and I have The Reason You Are Wrong ... this is a tough one.
Cole, what was your first one?
More Longly Kill Them.
Yeah, I think that's where my vote is. I know My Eyes Are Down Here is the leader by quantity.
Yeah, I also like more Longly Kill Them.
I can get behind that.
I think there's a lot of good options. For example, Hawaii Doesn't Count or Taco Opinions or that.
Taco Opinions is pretty good.
Yeah. I'm fine with any of them.
Okay.
But I agree that the one with the most votes seems the less compelling versus the random one-offs. Mm-hmm. For some reason.
Yeah, no, we've done that before. We have veered from the vote total
democracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's been shown that it doesn't work. So You know, let's stop kidding ourselves.
Can't argue with my eyes.
Cool.
Excellent.
All right. I'm going to go. I've got to get to bed. Yeah.
And I'll see you guys around.
Yep. Later, everybody.
Have a good night.
Thanks.
See you. Good night.
Bye.